Welcome to Create Your Own Light, where we harness our past, we embrace our future, and learn to conquer the roadblocks along the way together. I'm your host, Travis Howes. Let's get on with it. This episode is brought to you by YourWelder.com. YourWelder.com is an online directory of mobile welders. Whether at your home or at your industrial processing plant, we come to you. Our community of mobile welders can repair anything from the neighbor's mailbox that you just backed into or the cat bulldozer sitting on your job site. YourWelder.com is a directory of highly skilled professionals willing to help you on your job site on your timetable. YourWelder.com screens all of their welders using tools like photos from social media apps such as Instagram, Parler, and Facebook, even face-to-face meetups. YourWelder.com was built by actual industry welding experts who actually perform this type of work on a daily basis. And here's the best part. They're veteran-owned and operated. So go check them out at YourWelder.com. And also feel free to check them out on social media, where I'll include their links in the show notes. It's been about a month since I dropped an episode, so I figured I'd hop back on here, man. You guys got to understand, it's when you're a one-man show, producing all your own stuff, touring full-time, trying to run multiple social media accounts, it's a lot, man. So it's I'm not coming up with excuses, but I appreciate y'all following me, and I really appreciate the support. But sometimes, man, I gotta unplug from the podcast for a little bit. But I'm glad to be back on with you today. We got big things are happening right now. I have Shreveport coming up in a couple days. Today is March 6th, and I fly out tomorrow to Shreveport, Louisiana. And we have an event on the 9th, and we have 1,000 people registered. We're coming in about 300 shy of where we were in January on that one, just because we had to cancel due to those ice storms. But, man, I'm grateful for the 1,000 people that have registered and for the people that are making the trips, whether you're coming from far away or it's right in your backyard. Just thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, since the last podcast, we have added another date in South Carolina, my home state. And so I'm always grateful to be able to do this back in my home state. It's in central South Carolina, right outside of Clemson. And we already have over 1,000 people registered for that. And that event is on May the 11th. So if you have not checked the schedule and you want to come to a big event, that's going to be a pretty massive event. It's on the Southern Wesleyan University campus, just outside of Clemson in central South Carolina on May the 11th. I want to tell you folks, if you're out there and you're out there going through something, keep up the hard work. And I know people always say keep up the good work, but when I'm going through whatever I'm going through, I like to think about it as keep up the hard work, because it seems like nobody really wants to make the effort to become the greatest version of themselves. They want it very easily. I know when I say that, and I'm not talking about anybody specifically, but I see messages that I get, and I listen to what they're saying, and they want to expedite the process. It's like they want to bypass the entire race and just get to the finish line. And I get it. I get you don't want to be in that horrible state and a miserable state and that state that where you're ruining everything. But unfortunately, with this process, these are all things that you have to go through in order to get to that finish line and actually have everything intact. Like, you have to understand what all this is and what we go through and the devastation that it causes. And nobody wants that. But what I realized in my life, I wouldn't be where I am without any of that. If that makes any kind of sense at all. So when you're out there and things aren't going your way, you know, try to hold your head up high, because you're working hard and doing the best you can. I was on a phone conversation. I had a phone call this morning, and with someone. It's an older gentleman, actually, in his 70s. And he said that he's still working on trying to become the best version of him, of himself. And he said that recently he was in a store, and he was having an awful day. He was trying to find somebody to help him find something. And the person in the store gave him an attitude. So he immediately gave the attitude right back. And in an instant, he was in the middle of a confrontation with somebody that worked in the store. Now, this is a 73-year-old man. And he said, Travis, I found myself in a position to where the next thing out of my mouth was going to cause an explosion from either one of us. And he said, at that point, I realized I needed to set my drinks down and I just needed to walk out of the store. And he goes, and that was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And he says, you know, I come from that era where it takes a bigger man to walk away. And he says, and this is the one time in my life where I applied that. And he says, because I saw myself sitting in jail. I saw myself losing everything that I had worked my entire life for. I saw it going away in the blink of an eye because I wasn't going to be able to control myself. And he goes, I think the hard work that I had put in up until this point allowed me to do that. And that's what I'm getting at. We live in different times, man, where you can't have opinions about things. Everybody's pissed off about something. Everybody's confrontational about something. But the problem is, it's not like it used to be back in the day. You can't just slap a motherfucker anymore and that be that. Now it's like, you're going to find yourself in a lawsuit. You're going to find yourself on social media. You're going to find yourself out of a job, and you're going to find yourself, your family's going to suffer for the decisions you make. And you have to keep that stuff in mind. I saw a comment on one of my, not my Instagram, this was on TikTok, on one of the videos that I made. And the guy was like, I see a bunch of men on here just making excuses for having poor behavior, and nobody's owning the fact that they're just being douchebags. And then what I realized was, like, this guy doesn't understand the audience that he's really talking to. He doesn't understand that nobody's in here making excuses for the way that we are. We're finally realizing as a culture that something is different with us than it is with most people. And we're trying to figure this thing out, and we're trying to figure it out collectively and together as possible, is best way that we can. And to other people on the outside, yeah, we look like douchebags. And that brings me to my next point. I've been posting a lot of videos lately, especially on TikTok, about hypervigilance. I've grown really passionate about this subject for many reasons. When I teach post-traumatic purpose, my whole goal is to show people how hypervigilance, how it ruins our families. Now, I get it. It also protects our families, but we have to be able to find a happy medium so we can still be present with our families. And so my goal on social media, you only get 90 seconds on there, man. So, like, I can't go on there and set it up perfectly. When I'm teaching, I have 3.5 hours to talk about things, okay? So I'd only get 90 seconds. So what I try to do is, on my social media post, is just to show hypervigilance and how bad it really is and how many people do not really understand what it is we go through. In my next book that I'm writing, I don't know when it comes out, but I have this whole thing, man. One of the most difficult times for me still to this day is when I have my family in a vehicle with me. I am extra paranoid, extra alert, extra sensitive, extra hypervigilant, extra all these words that you can use in that time. Man, when I get to wherever our destination is, I'm literally emotionally exhausted. And I'm no fun to be around. I white knuckle it. And it's not that I'm living in fear. That's not it. Because I try to tell people, don't live in fear either. But I'm also extremely aware of how stupid other people are around us and how dangerous and how inconsiderate civilization is. And I think that's part of it. Like, when we're going, yeah, I can have conversations and all this, but it's all these micro movements that I'm doing I think it's called micro movements, where you're just constantly assessing. And I'm watching the left mirror, the right mirror, the rear view mirror. I'm listening to conversations. I'm engaged in conversations, but I'm controlling my reactionary gap when I'm driving. I'm making sure I'm not too close to a vehicle. If I am too close because I wasn't paying attention, I make sure I ease off of it. And I'm watching the car behind me to make sure they're paying attention, to make sure they're not going to plow through me. And I'm always watching for a reactionary gap that I can create for myself as far as left lane, right lane. Do I have time to get over if this goes bad, if this breaks bad, do I have time to get over there? If I don't, how many cars behind me how far behind me is the next vehicle? Is it 8 car lengths? Is it 10 car lengths, like, in the fast lane approaching me while I'm in the slow lane? If something jams up in the slow lane, can I wrench my car over real quick to the fast lane, or am I going to get nailed? Or do I shoot over into the emergency lane? Uh-oh, but never mind. There's an 18-wheeler up there broke down. I can't go over there because we'll rear end and we'll go up underneath there and everybody will die and a fucking car will explode. And it's things like that that are going on in my mind. And when we're on surface streets and I'm watching cars as they're approaching, I'm literally locking eyes with drivers, or not locking eyes because they're not paying attention, but I'm watching them. Is their head down? If their head is down, I need to be able to make an evasive movement because they're probably on their fucking phone. Are they drunk? Are they under some kind of, are they under the influence of something, you know? When I'm approaching intersections, I never get close to another car when we stop at a red light, because that's the police in me. Like, I leave myself a way out. I never try to be in the middle lane to where I could get blocked in. Just, and it's not because I think we're going to get carjacked. It's because I have been to those car wrecks where people are hung up in the middle. They can't get out, and then their car gets sandwiched. And I got kids in the back. You know what I mean? Like, it's when the light turns green, do you just put your foot on the gas and go, or do you clear the intersection? I've watched my wife do this so many times where she just, oh, the light's green, it's a fucking beautiful world, and just takes off. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Slow down. Just because the light turns green doesn't mean this is a fucking drag strip. Clear the intersection. I can't tell you as a police officer how many red lights we used to run cars through chasing them, and the other light was green. And thank God, well, I can't say that because I have had cars get fucking T-boned. But you know what I'm getting at? It's exhausting. And I don't think a normal spouse, or a spouse in general, that's sitting there riding with their husband. I'm just using husbands because I'm a husband, let's say that even the female first responder who's driving the car and her husband's not in this game, and he's not in the first responder community, and he's in whatever fucking job he's in, so he doesn't think the same way that we do about evasive maneuvers and all that. It's exhausting. And so when you can't carry a decent conversation with your spouse, or you don't really seem all there, it's not because you don't want to be there, because you're trying to fucking protect everybody. And it's hard, man. It's really hard, but it's worth it. I mean, you've got to do what you got to do. Is that being paranoid, or is that being safe? It's like, I know alligators are, or let's not even use alligators, let's use crocodiles. I know crocodiles will eat your ass over in Australia. Do you think I'm going to go swimming in an area that has crocodiles? Does that make me paranoid? Does that make me not living freely? Or does that make me, hey, kind of fucking smart, because I know the chances of when I go in there that my ass is going to get eaten? It's the same way out here driving, if that even makes sense. I don't even know if I can do that right, if I explain that correctly. I know there's times where I've stopped the car at a gas station, my whole family's gotten out, and I've just sat back and taken a breath like, fuck, whew, we're safe for now. And I'm anxiety riddled. You know, I put up a video walking through a parking lot the other day, and it went viral on TikTok. And all I'm doing is explaining, hey man, parking lots are dangerous, and you got to watch out because most people aren't watching out for you. And I tell my kids this all the time. I'm like, look, nobody is paying attention to you. Nobody's expecting you. You have to act like nobody sees you. And you have to watch everybody. And I talked about this in previous episodes. My girls, they understand what the white lights on the back of a car is. Those are reverse lights. And they understand the difference between tail lights and brake lights. Brake lights light up, tail lights stay just lit. So they understand when they see that brake light and then they see that white light, that car's backing up. They knew this at age 3 and 4. Does that make me paranoid, or does that make me a father that has been to some probably pretty shitty stuff and seen the outcome of it? And I'm just trying to protect my children the best way that I can. You know, we're in parking lots. I've never been to a call like this, but I know these things happen. I know people have hit up underneath cars. That was a thing back in the day. There was a thing, I want to say it was the Ricky Gibbons gang, or Ricky Gibbons in the 80s in Savannah, Georgia. There was a gang going around doing hits on people for gang initiations. And I don't know if this is where this comes from or not, but then you heard about people, and I heard that they would lay up underneath cars and like sneak people. But then you heard about the Achilles tendons cutters, where people would lay up under your car and like slit your Achilles tendons when you get there. I remember hearing about this as a child. I've never experienced this in my life. But I, to this day, when I'm scanning parking lots, I look underneath cars. I look, not necessarily even for people laying there, I look for feet on the other side. If somebody's crouched down or something, because they could easily just jump up and grab you. Is this paranoid? Maybe. Does it happen? Absolutely, 100%. Do I, when I'm walking by cars, am I just walking through a parking lot, or am I using the advantage of the reflections in the glass as mirrors when I'm walking? That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm watching all of those things. I watch where shopping carts are parked. I watch everything. And yeah, it's exhausting. I try not to live my life this way anymore, but I can't help it sometimes, especially when my children are around me. And I teach this stuff. I teach, hey man, be alert with your family, be aware, but try not to be so over the top that you can't have fun. And so that's what I'm talking about today. I'm talking about that over the topness that actually just kills everything we do. The conversations in restaurants when you're trying to eavesdrop on everybody's conversation because you want to make sure they're not plotting, when you're watching doors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This stuff has gotten a lot of attention on social media because it's a popular thing and so many of us go through it. So many of us go through it. And we got to think about the impact that that has on us. Like, why can't we just drive down the road with our family in the car like most normal people? You know, I've been to social gatherings where I am the most antisocial person there, not because I'm an asshole, but because I'm watching other assholes, especially when I used to be around people that were drinking, right? And I'm staying away from the problems. I'm watching where the problems are. If shit's going to break bad, I need to know where we're going, how we're getting out, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're like that and you're hanging around normal people, when I say normal people that don't have a fucking clue that the world is dangerous, you seem weird. And you come off as weird. And to spouses out there that we don't communicate with, they think something's wrong with you too sometimes. They think that you're an asshole and you just don't like people, which could be very well true. But sometimes it's the situations that make you feel like that. And so the only thing that makes you feel normal is sitting home. So you don't have to go through those elevated heart rates and you don't have to go through these exhausting evenings of trying to pretend to have fun, but you're not having fun because you're so worried about being in danger. And then you know what happens? Over time, like, division starts happening with you and your spouse, and then fights start happening, and then you start growing apart, and all because somebody just simply didn't understand you and understand why you're the way that you are, and because you suck at communicating that. And unfortunately, we have I want to talk about something that's really uncomfortable, but I'm going to address it anyway. We have one of the things that always bothers me when I hear about these suicides is when they do it in front of a family member or a spouse. And I understand to an extent. I understand that nothing can trigger somebody that's suffering like a spouse can. And you got to understand, spouses, I talked about this on the last episode. You got to understand how dangerous your role is in this whole thing. You have the most volatile role. You are literally the trigger sometimes, or the trigger point with your person that you're involved with. And we already have an epidemic of people hurting themselves, but we also have an epidemic of people doing it in front of people. And what that is, I don't understand like the psychological definition of this. But my understanding is that when they do that, they're trying to teach you a lesson. And they're like, it's you've pushed me to this point. Look what you made me do. Now you're going to live with this. And it's a split second decision that happens over and over and over and over and over and over. And it's insane. I can't tell you how many of these that I've heard about even recently. I mean, I can promise you, I've been at my point before where that has crossed my mind. Now, I've never put myself in that position because I realize how volatile and how dangerous that is. But when I speak to you, I'm speaking to you from an honest place. I think sometimes we get so frustrated with our spouses, with their lack of understanding just how fragile we really are, that in that moment, that explosive behavior that you cannot control because we didn't work on the little things, controlling the little explosions over time, and we just kind of brushed them off. Brush it off. But if you brush off those little ones, you're never going to be able to brush off the big one. And when that big one comes, something like this unfortunately happens. And I'm not blaming spouses. That's not what I'm doing. But I think we have a lot of spouses out there that are ignorant to, and that doesn't mean dumb. That's just a word that means you haven't been educated on what this thing really is or just how dangerous it really is. I mean, it's little trigger words that you can say. And it's like I get so many spouses, they want to help out in these situations, but they end up making it worse. And the only way to make it better is before it ever gets to that point, you have to be able to sit down and talk with the person that you love about what they go through, how severe it gets, and what you can do to help when it gets in that point or when they get to that point. And that's why I said in the most layman's terms in that last post, when you're at this point, you know when you're there, you know when it's getting close, you shut the fuck up and you back the fuck up. And that's not a pride thing. That's not you backing down from anybody. That's not, oh, the husband just gets to do whatever he wants or the wife, whoever's suffering, gets to do what they want. No, that's, hey, this is a dangerous moment and I need to be the one with the level head here. So maybe I should just swallow my pride for a second and back the fuck up and let them have the last word and ease the fuck out of here. Because pride is what gets us to that dangerous point. Pride is what gets people dead in those moments. Sometimes the last word is the last word. You having the last word will end up taking the person that you care about. It'll take their life. And you got to think about that and you got to take that seriously. There has been times where, you know, me and my spouse were not getting along. And I have asked, hey, I know this is going south. I know that this conversation is not going to end well. Please walk away. And I'm not placing blame. This is just me being transparent. But this is my spouse not understanding how dangerous that really was. And she gets it now. But having to stay there and have that last word, you have no idea what that'll do to a person like me in those moments. And I'm grateful that I'm still here, and I'm grateful that we were able to communicate through all of that and over the years and everything. But trust me, when I tell you, my mind has been to those places too. I completely understand it. And this can all be resolved with communication, but you can't think that in the heat of an argument, you're going to have constructive conversation. It's just not going to happen. So you have to have the ability to set that pride to the side and swallow it. One of you has to do it. And you know what? We'll collect our thoughts and get to this another time. I think one of the hardest places for a spouse to be is obviously dealing with this situation and always feeling like you're getting bulldozed because the person that's going through whatever they're going through, the emotional thing that they're going through, they just always get to vent and they always get to give their point of view, and your point of view is never taken into consideration. And I think that's probably one of the hardest places for a spouse that is living with someone that struggles. I think that's probably one of the hardest places to be in, is because you always feel like your feelings or your thoughts are never validated, and it always revolves around the other person. Trust me, I have lived that too. And I've been that person, and I struggle with that still to this day. And I try extremely hard to, when I am like juiced up about something, I try extremely hard to look at both sides of it. And sometimes it's hard in the middle of it, but I do try to settle it down the best that I can. And one thing that I have found is that, look, if you feel a situation is getting heated or going south, it's only going to go further south the longer it continues. There's never, ever going to be a time where you're both in the middle of an argument and you're going to say, you know what? You're right. And it's just going to get magically better. That's never going to happen. So what you got to be able to do is communicate with one another and push pause on the disagreement to let some of that frustration settle and then come back to the table and try to see it from both sides. That's the best advice I have for those kind of situations. It's a scary thing, I think, being on either end of that explosive behavior, that explosive temper. When that fuse is lit in someone, I think it's scary. One, being the person that explodes. Two, being on the other end of that explosion. I don't think there is a safe place or a comfortable place in that arrangement. I know as the explosive one, I think what happens with me, or what used to happen with me, is I would be so afraid of myself in those moments and my capabilities that it scared the shit out of me. And I remember years ago sitting down in therapy talking about this, and it's like, hey, look, I try my best to not let that happen. I try my best to diffuse a situation before it gets to that point. But when it gets there and I've done everything I can do and I feel like I'm backed in a corner, that's where I'm at. I'm backed into a corner. And then when I explode, the thoughts that go through my head, they're not normal. And it scares me, the things that I think about, or I used to think about. And I know I'm not the only one out there. I know that other people are like this too. And that's why I try to tell people, man, as a spouse, do not put anybody in a corner. And this isn't a time for jokes, but like, nobody puts baby in a corner. I know somebody just said that, you fucking asshole. I'm trying to be serious here. Youngsters won't know what that is. That's dirty. That's a dirty dancing quote. But what I'm trying to get at is, understand how volatile your role as a spouse can be in those moments. It all rides on you. Somebody has to have the cooler head, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being the one that, you know, you can walk away and say, you know what, we're going to live to fight another day because I'm the smart one here. I didn't push that person into a corner. I let them have the last word, whatever. It's not that important to me. And we'll get back at it later when they calm down. Sometimes it takes days. I know when I used to get really heated, man, it would take a couple days for that shit to wear off, because I would just hold on to it. And I would be fuming that someone would even challenge me. And, you know, I come from backgrounds where you don't get to challenge me. And I wasn't used to that. And I'm not saying that it's right, but that's just who I was. And so when I was challenged, you know, I was always in a position of authority. It's like, no, like, I got to push back now. And then what I've realized is like, you know what, man, that's pride too. That's just fucking stupid. So I hope some of that makes sense. And I hope that maybe whoever's listening to this, you can find some value in that. Because I do get so many messages from spouses about this stuff, and it's absolutely heartbreaking to know that this stuff goes on daily around this country. Back when I was, you know, trying to accommodate everybody under the social media sun, I used to be very responsive to everybody. If I got inboxed, man, I was all over it. And I would end up spending my days replying to people. I'm talking hours, dude. I would be engaging in multiple conversations with people, trying to help people, trying to do this, trying to do that. And I realized I was killing myself in the process. I was driving myself insane. I was putting so much on my plate, and no matter how much I scooped off of my plate, more was coming. And I never anticipated that happening. But this is why I don't like opening messages right here, because not only was I getting messages from a lot of people that I don't know, but look, I appreciate the support. Trust me, I am so grateful for support. But the reason I had to stop responding to so many people is because I never know what's on the other end of that and how triggering it can be and what it can do. And what I found was you would get breadcrumbed into shit. Like last week, case in point, last week I get a message about my fucking donkeys. And I was like, oh, this is innocent enough. I'm going to open this message because I could see the first couple things. It was about my donkeys. Innocently enough, this lady said, you know, something about donkeys. And I responded back and I go, they're the best animals in the world. I absolutely love them. And then she responded back, yeah, if you dig in their ears and you scratch in their ears, they'll smile at you, blah, 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 blah. And I said, yeah, I do this. So I thought, hey, this conversation is strictly about donkeys. And this is a safe conversation for me. It's not, hey, ran a baby over with a fucking lawnmower. I always use that reference because somebody hit me with that one time. I thought this was a safe thing, but all I did is I got breadcrumbed in. This woman, all she was doing was using my fucking donkeys to get me to talk to her fucking boyfriend. And she immediately, as soon as I responded back a couple times about the donkeys, hey, my boyfriend has this, 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 and this, and went off the fucking ledge on me, and here we go. And it was breadcrumbed me right into this conversation that I knew was not going to be healthy. So I didn't respond, and I guess I look like a dick. But people don't understand, man. It's like, I have this podcast. This is my platform to help people. I do my events. That is my podcast to help people. I am not a therapist. I just can't be a therapist for thousands and thousands of people. I can't do that. What I am is a voice for a lot of people. And I try to be a motivator for people to go get licensed professional help. Like, if I don't personally know you, I can't physically be your therapist or virtually. I can't be a virtual therapist. Legally, I can't do it either because I could fuck you up giving you the wrong advice. And I hope that that doesn't come across as like me being a dick. But case in point, I'm going to give you another, for instance. I got a message from a kid I grew up with the other day. Now, me and this dude are tight. I mean, we're tight. He can pick up a phone and call me right now. I've helped him a lot in his life. He's helped me. Whatever. I get a message from him the other day, and I open it up. And instantly, it was that Air Force veteran that set himself on fire burning to death the other day. That's what it was. I open it up, and this fucking guy's burning to death. This came from a trusted individual that I'm close with. Do you know what that fucking did to me? Do you have any clue what that made my mind spiral into? I'll give you a little hint. I was involved in a fire where 9 of my friends burned to death. And I had to go in that night with another team of people and locate them, identify them, and pull them out. That's what I'm getting at. That's why I don't really open messages anymore. Because even the people that know me, that are close to me, will send me some shit that they don't realize what that could do to someone like me. They just don't have a fucking clue. You imagine sending a video to a friend that has been raped and all of a sudden you send some fucking rape footage? Like, that's the equivalent. And I'm sorry that is that fucking over the top of an example. But that's what it's like for trauma victims, dude. I don't want to say victims, but people who've experienced trauma. You don't understand what they're going through. Man, there are fucking... Dude, there are television shows. I cannot watch certain scenes in tons of different things. The other night, we're watching Little House on the Prairie. Check this out. This is no lie. Season... I want to say it was 6. All the blind kids are in this house. And Albert Ingalls, the adopted son of Charles and Carolyn Ingalls, and we watch Little House with My Girls all the time because it's a fun show. But there was a fire in there, and it killed a woman, and it killed a baby. And they show the scene happening, and I'm over at the table looking in my plate of food, trying to not listen to it. My wife saw what was happening, ran over, grabbed the remote. My daughter was fighting her for the remote because my daughter just didn't understand what daddy, she didn't even put two and two together, my daughter. And mama's like, turn it, turn it, turn it, turn it. She was trying to protect me. My wife was trying to protect me because she could see visually I was fucked up. And what I was trying not to do, I was trying not to lose it at the table. And it took everything I had to hold it together. I wanted to scream. I wanted to throw my plate of food. My heart was beating out of my chest. I was sweating. And both of my daughters were kind of arguing with mom to not turn the channel. But mama grabbed the remote, pushed pause, and I just sat there for a minute. And then I saw my wife talking to my daughter. And then my daughter walks over to me and calmly said, "Daddy, I'm sorry, I forgot." And that's what she said. And so in that moment, I had an opportunity to have a constructive conversation with her. And I looked at her and I said, "Look, that's not your fault. It's not your fault for whatever happened in my life." I said, "But how I react would be my fault." I was like, "So just understand there's certain things, like in TV shows, and you're going to grow up as you get older. You're going to see, like, Daddy won't be around certain things. I'll walk away. But these are the things we got to talk about with our children." I mean, that fucked me up for like a good 10 minutes. What you going to do, man? You know, I thought that was a good experience. It's almost like that needed to happen. That needed to happen in front of my girls so I could show myself that I was in control of my emotions and I could not lose it on them for their ignorance. And again, ignorance is not a bad word. People take that the wrong way. But their ignorance to what their daddy has been through, they haven't been educated on that. They don't know how it affects me. So I thought that was a great training moment for all of us. And I appreciate my wife for jumping in on for the big win there. And spouses, guess what? That's how you can help de-escalate things. Because that situation could have went a totally different route had my wife not have jumped in. I saw the effort she was making. And while she was making it, I was sitting there shaking, trying to hold it together. And I don't know how much longer I had in me. I was trying. But she saved the day. And that's how you can jump in for the big win with your spouses. But you're never going to do that if you don't know them. So it's their responsibility to let you know them. Boom. Get to know one another. All right, y'all, I got to get going. I got to get packed up, but I just want to say thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Try to get another episode out here in a couple weeks. We also just booked Downey, California. I'm not sure if that event is going to be open to the public yet or if that's going to be just a Downey Police Department thing, and Downey's out there in the LA County. But if it is open, you know, I will let you guys know. But we do still have that event that's open in July. So July, I believe it's July 27th. That's going to be in Los Angeles. It's actually going to be in Beverly Hills at the Sabin Theater, which is a really sweet theater. It's a big ass theater. So we're going to need a lot of my West Coast people to show up and support, come out to this event. It's going to be really cool, put on by the LA Fire Department. So I appreciate y'all. I'm off to Shreveport, and then, hey, Central South Carolina, if you want to come down to South Carolina, it's open to everybody. I mean, you don't have to be from just Central South Carolina. You can come from Wisconsin to this event. I don't care. I mean, it's going to be a big one. It's going to be a really good one. So I think that that'd be a really fun one to be a part of if you ever wanted to come down to the Carolinas. That's inland. That's nowhere near the beach. So don't think you're coming to Central South Carolina and going to be on the beach. So that one's not on the beach, but it is in a very nice area. So I can't wait to see y'all. I appreciate the support. I love y'all. Thank you so much. Have a good one.